Visit licensureexams.com and try our samples completely free of charge.
Hello to our wonderful therapists out there, and welcome back to our Licensure Exam Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Linton Hutchinson, and I'm with my co-host, the incredible Stacey Frost.
Thank you, Linton, for that wonderful introduction. And hello, everyone. We're so glad that you're tuning in today as we talk about key techniques that are utilized in group therapy settings and how to apply them effectively. Remember, regardless of which treatment modalities you use in your everyday practice, like maybe individual and couples therapy, the exam will test you on your knowledge of a variety of treatment modalities, including group therapy.
Right, really it does. And group therapy can be an incredible, productive, and transformative experience when facilitated successfully and skillfully. The therapist takes on a more subtle guiding role, allowing group members to connect and gain insight through their shared discussion.
Exactly. So, Linton, what do you think? Let's get right to it and talk about some of the core techniques that therapists should have in their toolbox when leading groups. The first one we'll cover is blocking, which involves interrupting or stopping a member who is speaking in order to maintain appropriate boundaries or to get the group back on track.
Right. That's right. You can use blocking when a group member's statements are unproductive, inappropriate, or off topic, or if you notice they are monopolizing the group.
Okay. So here's an example. Let's say you're
like
leading a group therapy
what's
discussion.
An example?
I see what you're doing there. So you're leading a group therapy session for clients who have social anxiety. And one of the group members, we'll call him Clinton, says, "You know, I just had the best California roll at Publix last week. Boy, the sushi chef, Kai, he really perfected the consistency of the rice, and he gave me an extra helping of wasabi, no charge." On and on he goes about the joys of sushi. Well, you might say, "Clinton, while it's great to hear about your positive experience at Publix, and I agree they do have primo sushi, I want to bring us back to the topic at hand, which is managing social anxiety. Can you share a recent social situation that made you anxious and maybe how you coped with it?"
Clinton, huh? Good one, Stacy.
Yes.
Here's another. Using the same group that's meeting for social anxiety issues. Let's say you notice that someone, let's call her Tracy to protect the innocent, says, "You wouldn't believe what I found in our chicken coop the other day. There was a snake about 6 feet long and it had two egg-sized lumps halfway down his body." Tracy continues to talk to the group in vivid details about her encounter with the snake and efforts to protect her precious chickens. As a therapist, though you're probably secretly intrigued about this story, you recognize that Tracy's story is taking the group off course and it's time to get the train back on the track. Here's where blocking comes in handy by saying something like, "Tracy, that sounds like quite a startling experience with the snake in your chicken coop. Right now, I want to steer our discussion back to the topic of managing social anxiety, which is the focus of our group. While it's natural for our minds to wander to other experiences, it's important that we use our time together to support each other in dealing with anxious thoughts and feelings in social situations. Can you think of a recent social interaction where you felt particularly anxious and share how you coped with those feelings?"
Tracy, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like her. She sounds like my kind of gal. But point taken here, Clinton, that's a great example of how to handle a group member who goes off on a tangent, even if the story itself is really quite entertaining. By acknowledging Tracy's experience, but firmly redirecting the conversation, you help to maintain the group's focus and therapeutic value.
Exactly. Blocking reminds members to be conscious of time and keeps the group focused.
That's right. Next up, we have something called linking. In the context of group therapy, linking, like a chain link, linking means connecting different members' comments together to highlight similarities between their experiences.
For example, as the group therapist, you might say something like, "It seems that several of you have brought up challenges with asserting your needs in relationships. Let's explore that further. Tracy, you mentioned feeling anxious about expressing your opinions to your partner.
And Clinton, you shared that you often hold back from asking what you want from friends out of fear of rejection. It sounds like assertiveness is really a common struggle. What have others experienced in this area?
That's great linking. By drawing connections between group members' experiences, you help them to feel less alone and more understood. This fosters group cohesion and trust. Linking also allows the group to go deeper into key themes and issues.
Absolutely. Another important group therapy technique is interpreting. And this is where you offer a new perspective or insight into a group member's behavior or their comments in order to facilitate self-awareness and growth.
Yes, but you know, it's important not to do this too often and to allow space for the group members to agree, disagree, or clarify. For instance, you might say to Clinton, "Clinton, I noticed that when Tracy shared her story about the snake, you quickly jumped in with a joke. I wonder if humor is a way that you tried to diffuse tension or anxiety in social situations. What do you think?"
Right. And you're not stating it as an absolute fact, but you're really more proposing a possibility for Clinton to consider based on what you observed. And this invites him to reflect on his own behavior and those underlying motivations. So here's another example. Let's say that you're leading a group for clients who are struggling with substance abuse. And one group member, Sarah, shares the following. "I've been clean for 30 days now, but last night I had this vivid dream about using again. In the dream, I was with my old friends and we were at parties like we used to go to. I woke up feeling so guilty and ashamed, like I had actually relapsed. And I'm really worried that this means that I'm not truly committed to my sobriety." Well, as the therapist, you might offer this kind of interpretation. "Sarah, it sounds like the dream brought up a lot of difficult emotions for you. I wonder if the dream might be a way for your unconscious mind to process the loss and grief that you feel around letting go of your old lifestyle and that friend group that you had. Those relationships and experiences were a significant part of your life for a really long time, even if they were ultimately destructive. Now, it's natural to feel conflicted as you work to build a new sober identity. The guilt and shame that you felt upon waking may point to how strongly you value your sobriety now. What do you make of that as an interpretation?"
Well, you know, using that particular way of addressing that dream may be a little too confrontational. So one of the things that you can do is say, "If this were my dream."
Oh, yeah.
And then say, "If this was my dream, it would bring up to me a lot of different emotions that are going on. Mm-hmm. I was wonder if perhaps that I'm dealing with an unconscious process, blah, blah, blah." So that mm-hmm. way, it's a little less confrontational for the client.
Mm-hmm.
But by reframing Sarah's dream as a grief process, rather than a lack of commitment, which is another good way of doing it, you're normalizing her experience and emotions. You're also highlighting her values and the difficult identity transition she's navigating. The interpretation aims to deepen Sarah's self-understanding and remind her that recovery often involves mixed emotions and a sense of loss, even as you move towards health and healing. Inviting her to share her reaction to the interpretation would also empower her to take ownership of her own therapeutic process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, interpretations, as Linton just mentioned, should be used, you know, sparingly and obviously very skillfully, always in the service of the client's growth. Interpreting shows that the therapist is actively listening and is able to perceive those underlying emotions or motivations that the client is going through.
Well, like sushi, that's a wrap.
Hey, good one.
3 key techniques used in group therapy. The first one that we mentioned was blocking. And that is when the therapist interrupts or redirects
like this,
a group.
Like this? Like this?
Yes, like that. Stacy. Or redirects a group member who is monopolizing or going off topic or whose comments are inappropriate to maintain boundaries and focus. The second was linking. And linking involves drawing connections between different members' experiences to highlight and explore common themes and foster cohesion and interpretation. This is when the therapist offers a new perspective to a member's behavior or statement to facilitate insight and growth.
Well, thank you very much there, Clinton Linton. We hope this overview has been helpful as you prepare for your licensure exam and you continue developing your group therapy skills. Trust your training, and until next time, remember, it's in.
It's in there.